Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour of 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. It is the second day of December 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to, for instance, jump into the chat room, which is filling up now. I mean, it doesn't fill up, but we've been through that. But you're mighty welcome to pop in just any old time. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol Baker. Good evening, Jeremy in Vermont. Good evening, John and Lance and Michael. And, of course, good evening to our longtime veteran, indefatigable chat room moderator, Sparky. It is, of course, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Mm-hmm. And we will jump into the meat of all of that in short order. Let me also remind you that the Pop Out Listen Live player for The Horn is available at our website. And, of course, the means by which we keep this all running, the PayPal interface is also there. Now, and we've still got some edits and modifications to do, so I need to go ahead and give out the traditional mailing address as well, because it's not on there yet. If you prefer not to use PayPal, but in fact to use the traditional U.S. mail, then by all means do so, and just drop me a note and let me know, and Boss Man Wayne won't have to put on his spider-proof gloves when he goes to the mailbox. That is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. With the recollection that checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not see them. And so make it to, you know, The Horn, Head On Communications, something like that, which makes it easier for Boss Man Wayne, who takes care of business issues, to deal with. Now, as far as that's concerned, and I won't spend a lot of time on this, hopefully we'll just get it taken care of, because, and I announced this last night, but it probably bears repeating again, because I've got a doctor's appointment all the way down in Charleston tomorrow, Charleston, West Virginia, just for the sake of clarity. I don't know. I expect to be back here in time for a program, but I do not know this for certain. So if you, on the odd chance that I'm not here for a program, we had a challenge set up for tomorrow as well. So we got two challenges on the table tonight. We have two opportunities to double your money in terms of your support for The Horn. If we can come up with enough people to match a $100 offer from our dear friend Tom out in the San Francisco Bay Area, Tom wants to put forward his Keep the Indian Angry Challenge. Tom mentioned enjoying, as many do, the comments of our buddy the Angry Indian, and is putting forward $100 if you will but match it. 5 at 20, 10 at 10, 2 at 50, 3 at $33.33, 4 at 25, 5 at 20, So there's that. And then secondly, we have an anonymous, not the anonymous, but an anonymous offer of a $150 match for people to participate in as well. So we have, in fact, $250 worth of matching offers on the table this evening, which can help us significantly as we begin a new month of the absolutely frenetic, frenzied, wild-eyed bill paying. Okay? So hopefully, having said that, I will not need to mention it again, and we will simply go forward and go, yay! So we need to raise this evening $250 to match 200, so we can double that with $250 worth of matching offers. Okie doke. Okay. So it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. You may recall that Titanic Tuesday is named after, or named in dishonor of, the Titanic intellects that people the right wing in this country. Great big giant, and we're being sarcastic, of course, great big giant lizard brain the intellects, the impetus for same, coming from a remark that Jim once heard on Beckley Radio, as the 962nd tier right-wing blatherer took a call from one of his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing followers, who asked, "Steve, why is it you reckon that they is shells, like clam shells and stuff, in the rocks here in West Virginia, because we ain't got no beach?" To which the towering 962nd tier right-wing blatherer answered, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Really? No word yet on the movement of the Titanic crumb scraper, table crumb scraper. So yeah, we celebrate just how monumentally stupid the right wing are in this country on Tuesday, and we do it in memory of the movement of the Titanic plates. And so one asks, where then do we begin? Oh goodness me, where to begin? How's about we start with a brand newly elected teabagger congressman, and this guy's a real Lulu. He's got a history. Glenn Grothman, who comes from Wisconsin. He works in a lumber mill there. Never mind, I'm not going to do it. Who is upset about, once again, the poors. And he does not like Glenn Grothman. He does not like the poors because he thinks the poors are also lazy. And so he doesn't like your money being spent on programs to reduce poverty. No, really. He showed up on a television show that airs statewide in Wisconsin this past Sunday evening, where he was asked about anti-poverty programs, Glenn Grothman was. And he said, when you look at that amount of money, which is in essence a bribe not to work that hard, or a bribe not to marry someone with a full-time job, people immediately realize you have a problem. If you tell somebody you're going to get $35,000 if you don't get married, and you're not going to get anything if you marry someone making 50 grand a year, it's certainly a strong incentive not to raise children in wedlock. Does that word strike you as being, and this is just an aside, does that word strike you as being a little bit weird? Wedlock. Because it always did me. It sounds like some sort of marital bondage game. And some might, well, never mind. So anybody, and I'm open, I'll accept help where it whencesoever it may come. Where do you go to get paid $35,000 not to get married? Who's writing that check? Anybody? Bueller? Didn't think so. No, to be fair, according to Think Progress, that $35,000 number is something. Yeah, see, me neither, Carol Baker. News Ninja Carol Baker said, where do you go? I got nothing. But somewhere out there, the right-wingers want you to believe, and the teabaggers, and the birthers, and the deathers, and the tenthers, and the baggers, and the birchers, and the booger-eaters, you know, Republicans, libertarians, they want you to believe that somewhere out there, there's one of those little, just roadside little stands set up, you know, Lucy, the psychiatrist, is in, only it's Lucy passing out $35,000 checks for people to not get married. No, Think Progress points out that this apparently comes from a study done by the right-wing Cato Institute. You might recall Cato Institute is named after a cranky old prick from the late Roman Republic who demonstrated that he was more interested in disemboweling himself than having to live in a world in which there was even the most modest level of equality with, you know, the poors. So I guess it only makes sense that they would crank out such a study. Now, the Cato Institute... these are $35,000 theoretical dollars that you can spend on theoretical food and theoretical bills and theoretical tires and theoretical, yeah. As Think Progress puts it, the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities discredited the story or the study insofar as the Cato study describes theoretical totals that a person could extract from a combination of anti-poverty programs without bothering to link that theoretical figure back to, and they put it so gently here, practical realities. But that's okay, because Glenn Grothman doesn't have to worry about people, you know, the people who voted for him actually looking behind, because he just says it, and since they're right-wingers and authoritarians, they believe it. They march, damn it. They are the collective. They are Borg. They have the hive mind. Glenn Grothman says, well, you know, you can get a $35,000 check just for being poor. And wrong accent, of course. And the right wing simply says, yeah, damn it. And they never say, well, where do I get me one of those $35,000 checks? Because, of course, they're all God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christian, Ebola-hating, ISIS-killing patriots with guns. And they're going to go up there, and they're never going to go up there and ask for one of them $35,000 checks. They'd be un-American. But they out there, oh, yes, they are, and they're just giving away hand over fist. $35,000 checks. Money checks. So Glenn Grothman, he's going to go to Washington, and he's going to wipe out all them $35,000 money checks. But that's okay. He's our first Titanic intellect for the evening. The poors are bribed with imaginary $35,000 checks. Lovely. Just lovely. Yeah, note coming in. I said the magic word, and there we were. Our good friend Jenny in Wisconsin said, oh, my God, this man has been a thorn in my side for so many years. He's a total ass. He lives with his mom. He moved to win this seat. I'm so glad I live in Milwaukee now where I don't think my neighbors are voting for this jackass. And you need to do a slow, dumb Wisconsin accent. Maybe add dare. Dare. Yeah, I forgot about the dare. Yeah, dare. Yeah, you're getting dare bribes dare. Yeah. Jenny continues, said he's also adding that you can get some school grants and stuff. Arrgh. And by the way, for those of you, he also refers to women as gals dare. And he also, oh goody, we've got audio to go with it. Thank you so much, Jenny. Glenn Grothman, who believes in imaginary $35,000 government money checks, also thinks that there's a what? Okay. Apparently, there is, according to Glenn Grothman, a war on the men's.
Countries are not overthrown from without. They're overthrown from within. They commit suicide. And in a lot of ways, I'm afraid our country is in the process of committing suicide today. In my 4 minutes, I'm going to do what I can to address three issues that none of the politicians are addressing, but that will inevitably lead to the suicide of this country. Okay? The first issue I'm going to address is that of the excessive welfare benefits leading to the breakdown of the American family. Okay? Now, okay. I know a lot of gals who are having kids out of wedlock.
Yeah,
and I
gals.
Love them. I've been outside abortion clinics, and I've encouraged them.
What? Huh? What? Now, granted, this is a little bit old because this goes back to when Russ Feingold was still in the Senate, which means it is, in fact, a very, very long time ago. But you know what? Stupid never sleeps, and it doesn't go into hibernation, and it generally presses down and gathers together and just makes more stupid. And that one, thank you, Jenny, thank you. That one just sort of jumped all over me. What's this about the gals? You vagina gals? What? It's gonna be fun.
This country, okay? The first issue I'm going to address is that of the excessive welfare benefits leading to the breakdown of the American family.
Why are they cheering the breakdown of the American family? Baggers, Republicans, what have you. Way back then, they had a sign, if Senator Feingold votes for Obama's global warming bill, it will kill jobs in Wisconsin. No, it turns out the guy who kills jobs in Wisconsin is Governor Scott Walker, who's been killing them left and right ever since he took office. Okay, but he's got this thing in his hand. He's reading from some sort of prepared remarks that are apparently the owner's manual to a Kenmore refrigerator or something. I don't know. Yeah, cheer for the breakdown of the American family some more.
Okay.
Okay.
Now I know a lot of gals who are having kids out of wedlock.
Never mind. You know, I'd kind of like to know how it is he knows those gals. and how they're having the kids out of wedlock again with the locking. And I'd kind of also like to know what his relationship is to the gals and the wedlock and the children, the kids that are being born out of it without little ankle bracelets, apparently, or something. I don't know, dear.
I love them. I've been outside abortion clinics.
Wait a minute. He loves the gals who are having the kids outside of wedlock, and he knows them because he's been outside of abortion clinics. And what?
Now, I know a lot of gals who are having kids out of wedlock, and I love them. I've been outside abortion clinics, and I've encouraged them.
Encourage them to what, dear Glenn? We'll have to, I don't know.
Be that as it may,
yeah.
50 years ago, and most people here remember that, or 40...
50 years ago they were outside the abortion clinics, encouraging the gals? I'm getting lost.
Years ago, it was very rare to have a child raised without a father.
You know, I'd say it's probably significantly unlikely to be making children without fathers even now, especially among those poors, because they have to spend a lot of money at a reproductive fertility clinic to get children without fathers. Here.
Last year in the United States, 41% of the children in this country were born out of wedlock. Why is that?
I don't know.
If you look at a single gal...
We're back to the gals. We're going to talk about single gals, which means that she ain't been locked up to no weds.
If you look at a single gal making $15,000 a year with two children in this country, this is what she's eligible for.
Oh, boy, we're going to learn about those $35,000 now. Okay, here's what she gets for having a new car. No, she doesn't get that kind of thing, dear. Those gals.
$7,600 a year in free rental assistance, $9,000 a year in free daycare, an earned income credit check of $5,500, food stamps.
Oh, and this is apparently coming from that owner's manual for that Kenmore refrigerator, apparently, thing there, hey.
Of $5,400, free medical care of about $4,000, which is artificially understated, about $7,000.
Artificially what? I thought you wanted the babies to have the fathers.
$100 a year in free energy assistance. If she's in Milwaukee, she's rewarded because she doesn't have a husband, with about a $6,000 a year tuition to a private school for her 7-year-old child. I'm not even including the fact that we will give her a free college education because she's poor.
Yeah, okay. We want to make sure that the poors don't go to school. Is that the lesson we're learning here, Glenn? Dear? Gosh. Can't have the poors going to school now, and you don't want the poor moms going to school and learning how to not be poor or nothing. But, Glenn, then they might vote Republican for you.
They also, and any big company will tell you this, they are doing what they can to promote the women ahead of the men. Now, in addition to the fact...
Well, that's because they've gotten all those free educations at those free private schools that the men's didn't get. Let's hear about the men's here.
That leads to a little bit of chicanery as people...
And out of wedlock, you can't be having chicanery.
Pretend the woman's owning the company when the guy's owning the company. In the long...
You know, because the gals are never smart enough to own a company. I mean, that woman, that Mary Burke lady, who ran for governor against Scott Walker and got beat like a barred mule. Well, yeah, nobody thinks she actually owns that company making those bicycles. That's because a woman can't do that because, you know, she's not smart enough, you know, because they're gals.
Run, a lot of women like to stay at home and have their husbands be the primary breadwinner. You have to ask yourself, in this country, can we continue to exist if we have a government which is actively discouraging the government or the businesses from hiring men? And that's a very sensitive issue, but that's what's going on in America today.
Very sensitive. Wow!
It's another issue that nobody is tackling.
Oh, but he's been elected to be a teabagging congressman now, so he's going to go tackle it in Washington, D.C. Glenn Grothman is. By the way, just in case you were wondering, Glenn Grothman is also in favor of blowing up the Pinocchio Hills up by Lake Superior and poisoning some of the freshest, most wonderful water remaining on the North American continent. You know, did he get a $35,000 check from Bill Williams and Chris Klein and GTAC? Well, I betcha he did. Dare?
So those are three issues I give you to ask to your politicians in the next election cycle. Because nobody's bringing it up, and our country is not going to survive.
Oh, he's shaking that finger, and I think he's going to take a shoe off and start pounding on the lectern.
If we wind up with 65% of the kids born without a father, our country is...
Yeah, you know, if we have 65% of kids born without a father, I think we're going to have a great increase in new religions. Stars in the East, wise guys on porches and stuff, you know. Dare, gals. I can't take it anymore. The stupid is strong with this one. Ron and Raleigh with an early note. Subject line, please! Hey, Bob. Hey, Ron. Please tell me what in the Sam Hill is the matter with white people that they elect these drooling pillocks to office. What he didn't articulate is that those people getting that $35,000 checks are Negroes, not fine upstanding white folks. Well, see, there was a bit of dog whistle code going on there. You know, women. When a white guy is talking about welfare and the poor's, and he says women or men or without fathers, you can always insert the missing adjective because it's just, when you're talking right-wing code among right-wingers, certain adjectives are assumed. Black women. Poor black people. Women without black fathers. Children without black fathers. Yeah, exactly. Oh, Ron gets it. I think Ron is probably a master translator of, wingspeak. Then there's Michael and Dare Madison. Golly gee dim gals dare is the subject line. Oh dear, we may have started something, Jenny. But Mr. Grothman, I thought artificially understated was how dim lesbian gals dare make their babies with the turkey baster dare, hey. Oh, don't get him started on the lesbians, Michael. Oh, that'll never do, Dare. You get an idea of how much fun this Moran or this Titanic Tuesday is going to be. They run together, the Morans and the Titanics. Yeah, those are bribes, $35,000 bribes. To keep people from voting for really smart people like Glenn Grothman. Whew! Oh, yeah. And then, you know, I think it becomes more and more apparent that we have a police problem in this country. I mean, just in the last few weeks, and I read something today, the grand jury in New York may elect not to indict there as well. Oh, because we're, what, all Mississippi now? Yeah. And much of this may be foreclosed soon. But simply because, those wise, wise rats, Robert Salito, Thomas, and Scalia, hey, Kennedy too, but we can't do anything with the K. Those Stark geniuses, Scalia, Thomas, Alito, Roberts, and Kennedy. They're going to They've decided they want to hear a lawsuit. They get to, you know, the Supreme Court gets to decide what it wants to hear. It's a case that originates in San Francisco where there was a call to the police for help. The police show up at a group home, and they knew that the person they were responding in regard to, a person by the name of Teresa Sheehan, they knew that she was mentally ill. They knew that she was getting worse. And they also knew that she had been perceived as dangerous to other people. The police were sent to safely transport her, emphasis on the word safely, to a mental health facility so that she could be involuntarily confined and treated. Well, it didn't go down quite like that. Instead, the police fired 6 shots at Ms. Sheehan, and miraculously, she survived. And she sued, or someone sued on her behalf, saying that given all the knowledge that the police officers had, they were required under law, or should be, to have considered the fact that she was mentally ill and not shoot her. And the Supreme, and this has wound its way through the court process until it got up before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has said, heck yeah, let's consider that case. Do you feel confident they'll reach the right conclusion? Because I don't. I mean, after all, when he was on the United States Circuit Court, Sammy Alito once ruled that it was okay to shoot a fleeing black kid in the head, even though he was unarmed and posed no threat to officers. Now, this isn't going to be an overarching case about whether or not cops should just maybe refrain from shooting people, but whether or not the police should take special precautions, as it's described, in the application of deadly force when they know a person is mentally ill. And, well, this will be interesting because, among other things, I think Texas is getting ready to kill a guy who was so deeply lost in his own schizoid processes, mental illness, whatever, that he went and killed his in-laws and thinks he's a cowboy, and a few other characters as well. Among other things, part of the reason this case is being taken up is because of the number of people number of mentally ill people that the police use deadly force against. According to the Portland Press Herald, the Portland, Maine Press Herald, who did a study, nearly half of people between the years 2000 and 2012, nearly half of the people that the police shot were mentally ill. The study also noted that police lack anything resembling proper training about regarding de-escalating potentially deadly interactions. Meanwhile, over at the Department of Justice, which, of course, we must remember, according to Andrea Tanteros of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, is run like the Black Panthers, whatever that means. The Department of Justice has investigated, and the Department of Justice says police officers routinely use more force than necessary against people who are mentally ill, and that overuse of deadly force results in deaths and serious injuries in far too many instances. And you know, there is that thing they teach you, like on the first day of law school when you're having your first cup of coffee there. It's a line that says, hard cases make bad law. That's why hard cases wind up in front of people like the stark geniuses of the right wing on the court. Yeah, Scalia, Thomas, Alito, Roberts, and Kennedy. The fact pattern in this case is, I mean, who would want to be a police officer in this situation? When they were called to the group home where she and Ms. Sheehan lived, and they showed up with no warrant in hand, Ms. Sheehan was waving a knife around, and she said, you know, I'll cut you, kill you, gut you like a carp. So then that's when the officers in the San Francisco PD officers got real smart and went back out into the hallway and called for backup. But, however, they didn't wait for the backup. Instead, they drew their freedom protectors, bulled their way back into her room, and she threatened them again with the knife, and they shot her 5 or 6 times. But she survived. Wow. So that's what's going to be decided by the Supreme Court, and I'm not at all comfortable. I don't know about you. Ron and Raleigh pointing out the guy that they're getting ready to kill down in Texas, you know, for freedom. Because it ain't no fun if you don't get to lynch somebody in Texas every once in a while, right? The guy, I can't remember his name. The case is fairly famous. He's been on death row down in, what, Huntsville? Or is it Huntsville by the time you get to Texas? In Alabama, it's Huntsville. I think it's Huntsville in Texas. But as Ron points out, he thinks he's being executed because he's been preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ to the other inmates on death row. He has utterly no comprehension of what's going on. His brain is just gone. In fact, when he was tried for the murders, the trial court in Texas, I didn't even know they had kangaroos in Texas. The trial court in Texas decided he was A, competent to stand trial, even though he's got 6 or 7 people living inside his skull. And then, having decided he was competent to stand trial, they decided he was competent to represent himself because he fired all of his lawyers in the name of Jesus and proceeded to conduct his own defense in a cowboy costume. Mm-hmm. And he called God Almighty and the Pope as witnesses. Yep. And, you know, we give him a fair trial, now let's string him up. Mm-hmm. Because this is the greatest country in the world. Right? Mm-hmm. Hey, thank you very kindly, Sal. Sal has got us started this evening, 38 minutes into the program, and we now have $245 to go, fundraising-wise, for the evening. Remember, we've got 2 challenges. First, 100 from our buddy Tom, and then 150 anonymously put forward. And you can double all of that this evening if we can come up with that much in the way of contributions, which would be awesome. Because, you know, getting in a hole in the front end of December is a real pain in the tuchus. But let's stay on task and on topic, because we got lots of stuff to deal with. Cops, police do have, in fact, a difficult job. There's a lot of jobs in this world that are difficult. But there aren't a lot of jobs. I mean, let's say you work on high iron building skyscrapers. That is a difficult job. It's a frightening job. No amount of money could make me do that job because I'd be dead after the first day. But there are people who are very good at it. And they do it well. But even if you're working, you know, 50 stories up in the air putting up the skeleton of a new building, there's some things you can expect that you won't have to deal with, that you're going to have to deal with somewhere along the way if you're the police. Yeah. Take, for instance, Nathan Channing. Nathan Channing comes from Fruitvale, Colorado. You're going to understand in a minute why that's funny. And Nathan Channing has been touched by the long arm of the law. The long arm of the law that reached out and touched him was, in fact, Deputy Bunch in Fruitvale. Yes. Now, can we just take it as plain old garden variety common sense? Don't screw with police. I mean, I saw a video a while back of some street magician who went up and dangled a bag of what was perceived to be marijuana in front of a cop and said, "Hey, you want to get high?" And then, of course, being a street magician, he made the cop he made the marijuana disappear and made the cop very angry. Deputies Love and Deputy Bunch were on patrol in the city. Love and Bunch. When they saw a man, yeah, well, they perceived imminent danger. They saw a deadly weapon. The deadly weapon was a banana. No, really. They arrested 27-year-old Nathan Channing, who was apparently shooting a comedy video for pointing a banana at police. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel and Moral Volcano of Freedom, whatever, says, "I immediately ducked in my patrol car and accelerated, continuing northbound, fearing that it was a weapon. Based on training and experience, I have seen handguns in many shapes and colors and perceived this to be a handgun." Remember, it was a banana. You know, they got those 3D printers out there, and we're seeing a lot of these young kids out there with banana shaped 44 magnums now, and it's dangerous. Y'all be careful out there. Young Mr. Channing said he was trying to lighten the holiday spirit by producing a YouTube video. "Based on training and experience, I've seen handguns in many shapes." And you know what? I think it's about damn time we insist that the police... enough with the insisting. It's about damn time that we just explain to the police that old Monty Python videos are not, in fact, training videos, even if John Cleese has stripes on his sleeve. Oh, for Pete's sakes.
Not here.
I can see that. What's the matter with them?
I don't know. Perhaps they've got flu.
Flu? Flu? They've been eating too much fresh fruit. Right, now, self-defense. Tonight I should be carrying on from where I got to last week. When I was showing you how to defend yourself against anyone who attacks you armed with a piece of fresh fruit.
You promised you wouldn't do fruit this week.
What do you mean?
Well, we've done fresh fruit for the last 9 weeks.
What's wrong with fruit? You think you know it all, eh?
Well, can't we do something else for a change?
Like someone who attacks you with a pointed stick.
Pointed sticks? Oh, we want to learn how to defend ourselves against pointed sticks, do we? Getting all iron mighty, eh? Fresh fruit not good enough for you, eh? Well, I'll tell you something, my lad. When you're walking home tonight and some homicidal maniac comes after you with a bunch of Logan Brace, don't come trying to win. Right, the passion fruit. When you're a sailor lunges at you with the passion fruit, that's...
We've done the passion fruit.
What?
We've done the passion fruit.
We've done oranges, apples, grapefruit.
Whole and segments.
Pomegranates, greengages.
Grapes, passion fruits.
Lemons.
Plums.
Yeah, and mangoes in syrup.
How about cherries?
We've done that. Then.
Red and black.
Yes.
All right then. Bananas. Oh. We haven't done them, have we? Oh. Right, bananas. How do you defend yourself against the man armed with a banana? Yeah, you, take this. Now, it's quite simple to defend yourself against the banana thief. First of all, you force him to drop the banana. Next, you eat the banana, thus disarming him. You have now rendered him helpless.
Suppose he's got a bunch.
Shut up!
Suppose he's got a pointed stick.
Shut up, right now. You, Mr. Apricot.
Harrison.
I'm a service to Harrison. Come with me with that banana, and come on, attack me with it. As hard as you like, come on. No, put something into it, for God's sake! Hold it like that! Scream! Now, come on, attack me! Come on! No! No, I eat the banana!
You shot him! He's completely dead! You shot him!
Right. I have now eaten the banana! The deceased, Mr. Apricot, is now disarmed!
You shot him! You shot him dead!
Why, he was attacking me with a banana!
Well, you told him to!
No, I'm only doing me job!
I'm only doing me job! That's where we are. We're almost fresh out of 2014. We're about to start some brand new 2015. And Detective Bunch. What if he has a bunch? Ah, he's the detective. Detective Deputy Bunch is out there protecting Fruitvale, Colorado. Against a man armed with a banana. May I suggest that young Mr. Channing is lucky to be alive? Now, I'm going to make an assumption here. I'm guessing young 27-year-old Mr. Channing is anybody? White? Because had he been wielding that banana with skin darker than, say, you know, me, he'd be dead. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine a mother or a father explaining to their son or daughter of color, that, you know, watch out for the police, nothing. I mean, you've heard it talked about on this program. But it's okay if you want to point a banana at the police. See, John Cleese has me saying banana. No! No! You keep your banana in the bag until you get home. And your apricots, your green gages, and your plums, and your black and red cherries. It's a frightening world out there. Now, on top of all of this, we also have to take into account, and I saw this over on Carol's Facebook page earlier today. Members of the Cleveland Police Department, Cleveland, Ohio. Not Cleveland, Tennessee. Members of the Cleveland, Ohio Police Department have filed suit. A lawsuit, yes. And it's not just Cleveland police officers, it's white Cleveland police officers. And how is it they are aggrieved? they are aggrieved because the white Cleveland police officers in this lawsuit say that they are being treated more harshly than their black police colleagues when they shoot black people. No, really. That sounds like a Monty Python skit too, doesn't it? Only it's not, because see, in 2012, police officers gunned down black people. In particular, there was a deadly November 2012 car chase. 13 police officers fired over 130 shots at a Chevy Malibu. Each of the occupants of the Chevy Malibu received more than 20 gunshot wounds, and they both, not surprisingly, died. Neither of the two individuals in the Chevy Malibu were in possession of anything even resembling a weapon, and not even a banana. Now, when it came time to investigate the incident, it turned out that the police officers involved in putting 20 rounds through two human beings who were absolutely unarmed, and moreover firing 130 shots, turns out that they lied. The police did. They fudged up their statements. They misidentified the suspects. And they didn't specify that they'd even fired shots. This cop riot, because that's what it was, this cop riot cost the city of Cleveland $3 million in a lawsuit settlement. It cost the two occupants of the automobile their lives. So the white police officers in Cleveland are now claiming via the suit papers that they are subjected to, quote, onerous burdens on non-African American officers, including the plaintiffs, because of their race. And they say that their due process is violated as a result thereof. They say that they've suffered lost wages, and that they've had impairment of their professional reputations, humiliation, emotional distress, mental anguish, and other serious damages. No, really. The city of Cleveland, through its insurer, of course, just paid out $3 million because 13 cops shot two unarmed African-American individuals in an automobile, and the cops who killed them are suing, saying they're the ones being oppressed because they're white. You know what the oppression was? They were put on 3 days of administrative leave, and then when they came back from administrative leave, they were put on restricted duty. On the restricted duty, these abused white cops said that they were forced to do menial and unpleasant tasks, and that they were denied overtime pay. Oh, for pity's sakes. You know, the right wing is... Just tune in any right-wing radio. No, don't. Take my word for it. This one you can take my word for. Sooner or later, some right-wing blather state will begin babbling on and on and on about lawsuit abuse. Especially if they've recently got a blast from the United States Chamber of Commerce talking about lawsuit abuse and trial lawyers and destroying America. And you know what? All you got to do is scorch yourself with a little coffee from McDonald's and you can get rich, 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 rich. Oddly enough, though, I will warrant that you will never hear a right-winger go into paroxysms of righteous indignation over this lawsuit where a bunch of cops, white cops, are suing because they killed a couple of black guys and then had to go on administrative leave and swab out a couple of toilets or something. Because this isn't lawsuit abuse, right? Right. 5 minutes before the hour. Hey, Carol.
Hey.
Fit to screaming yet?
Well, that's why I said it to you with the tagline, coming to you live from the You Can't Make This Shit Up Variety Hour.
No, I read it. I stopped, you know, because I do. I've been burned now. And you know, this sounds oniony.
Well, I know, but it's not. It's the real deal. These cops are really suing, and they're steadfast. Their police union is steadfast that these poor, oppressed white cops who still have jobs.
Yeah, it's not exactly. I'm glad you brought that up. It's not like they're sitting there rattling a tin cup outside a building in Cleveland. They're still getting public. They're still getting paid with public monies. Their checks are still clearing, right?
Yeah, better than most of America's who didn't kill anybody.
Meanwhile, Glenn Grothman in Wisconsin is worried about the poor's getting those $35,000 checks.
Sorry, I was having a real Fargo moment while you were doing that act. In my mind, I just kept going, yeah, gals, yeah.
My word. just got a note in from Dan saying, "Well, I knew I'd hear the white disprivilege sooner or later. Here we are."
Mercy. Oh, it gets better. It gets better. Did you see Morning Joe yesterday?
Oh Jesus! I did not see it, but I read the rude pundit's account of it.
Well, I kind of bitch slapped him around a little bit myself.
Good.
Because, you know, he's sitting there. Well, first of all, I think if you're going to use the word spew at this point, you have to toss in sheeple and what's the other word?
I don't know. Can we?
Wake up. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You have to put wake up in all caps.
Right.
He says the media are doing a disservice to cops by pushing the narrative that police officers are just going around looking to shoot and kill black people. Well, the truth of the matter is the media never said that the police are just going around looking to shoot and kill black people. So the guy claims he's a journalist, and there's a point of journalistic integrity where you have to say what people are actually saying.
Right. Well, Joe Scarborough is a journalist the way that I'm the czar of all the Russias.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah, got that extra molar in the back. It proves it. Yeah, me and Cliff Clavin.
Duh.
The
media did not kill Mike Brown. Social media didn't kill Mike Brown. Darren Wilson killed Mike Brown. And there have been 14 more Mike Browns, i.e. unarmed black men, killed by white cops since Mike Brown.
Yeah, and let's remember, Joe is a Southern fella. I mean, even when he was in the Congress, he was a representing Pensacola stan, which is up in that part of Florida, which is decidedly Southern. It's not like the cosmopolitan part of Florida where you hear all kinds of different accents, and it's very much an international area.
I mean, it's South Manhattan.
Joe is from the part of Florida that is decidedly part of Dixie. And so I wasn't at all surprised. I was just expecting him to start talking about outside agitators. Right? I mean, he's... Well...
Well, it was his, I can't take it anymore stance. And I'm like, I'm so sorry if you can't take it anymore, Joe. Because I understand how hard this has been for you, being part of the persecuted rich white male class and all.
Yeah, the suffering was palpable, wasn't it? But the reason I couldn't get very far into it is early in the process, and you got to wonder, you know, who's running things over there? I mean, I like them as well or better. I like them better, not Joe, but most of the folks that I've had contact with, I like them a lot, and they're nice, good people, working hard.
And if one of the liberals or progressives on that network had referred to anyone, Carol, say, oh, I don't know, Ted Cruz, as a thug, because Joe Scarborough referred to Michael Brown on air, he called him a thug.
Yeah.
Which is 2014 speak for that
word, N-word.
That word with an N, an I, two G's, an E, and an R that isn't ginger.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, again, with the dog whistles, right?
Yeah.
So everybody knows when a right-winger calls Michael Brown dead Michael Brown, a thug, everybody knows that what he's using is that other word.
Mm-hmm.
Were your inner tubes splashed across with the Joe Scarborough involuntarily takes 6-week vacation so he can learn how not to refer to people? No.
Yeah, I know. I'm just, it's the whole white people are persecuted, Christians are persecuted, you know, and it runs right down to that whole Kurt Schilling kerfuffle.
Yeah.
Where he gets to sit and mouth off about, you know, creationism, and when another person on his network very politely points out that there are transitionary fossils, that he gets suspended for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm just kind of one of those people that I'm like, if Kurt Schilling, he attacked evolution with all the authority of Charles Darwin's famous critique of designated hitters.
That's beautiful. Although, well, but this, the problem here, I feel. It may be dart in the neck time for me, Carol, because I'm beginning to perceive that there is a vast conspiracy out there that is trying to drive me to kick all of my furniture to splinters. Because, you know, did you get the hockey puck and the duct tape and sit down and watch the Janae Rice interview?
Oh. Where she went on TV and apologized because the Ravens scripted it out for her.
Oh, that wasn't the part I loved best. The part I loved best was the part where she explained that God caused Ray to knock her unconscious and drag her out of the elevator like a piece of an animal carcass. That was, you know, God put them in that position for a reason. And, wow! Really? God punched you out?
He's such a rascal.
Oh, he's a scamp.
I feel like every day I wake up and it's like death by a thousand paper cuts.
I want to play fair here. And I don't want to say that somebody is something that somebody isn't.
Like?
But when the wife of a millionaire football player explains to the entire country that God meant for her to get punched out by her husband, What does that say to a woman in, say, much more desperate non-millionaire straits when her husband comes home having, with a 36-pack of Keystone Light and proceeds to drink every last one of them and then decides to get a little exercise in by beating up the old lady?
Thank you, Jesus.
And I'm sorry if this is triggerish for people. That's not my intent. But I mean, this is, I mean,
Hey, Bob, the whole thing's triggerish for me, and I'll tell you why. I spent 10 years or 9 years living with a man who thought that championship wife beating was some sort of sport. And as you can tell, I'm cured in every way. I used to be wallpaper, and I'm not that person anymore, and nobody lays a hand on me and lives to tell the tale. Nobody talks down to me and comes out of it feeling like there's anything left but scorched earth.
Oh, you must have loved Glenn Grothman and the gals.
Well, I haven't been within kicking distance of Glenn Grothman's... Oh, sorry, I think I just coughed up a hairball.
Yeah, Luke.
Glenn's nards, or I'd kick him in the schnutz and go to jail for talking to me like that.
Well, again, you know, by what percentage of the vote did he win election? He's not reelected. He's elected. How many good Wisconsin people went to the polls and said, oh yeah, I definitely want him representing me and make sure I don't get no $35,000 check there.
Well, there were a lot of gerrymandered districts across the country that made those seats just rock dead safe, buddy. And it is just, it's wearing. But anyway, I'm not going to hang out here tonight for too long because there's so many wonderful people I know want to call in. But listen, I learned a new word today.
Really?
I did. And it's a Japanese word. It's called kataki.
Kataki.
Do you know what it means?
No, I haven't any idea.
It means revenge.
Yes, yes. Tell me more.
Well, I just want you to listen up here for a second.
It's a world of laughter, a world of tears. It's a world of hopes and a world of fear.
Calliope.
Calliope.
And it's time we're away. It's a small world after all.
Da, 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 da. I'm impervious. Da, 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 da. Can't touch me.
It's a small...
Calliope. Calliope, damn it. It's a halcyon day for some Calliope music.
I can't hear you because it's such a small world after all. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. Stick up for Tim, you know.
I did. I just love him so much.
It's okay. I'm impervious. It is a deep and dark secret, the one song that earworms me, and we don't tell anybody.
That's okay, because...
I mean, even with...
I don't care how much I have to pay Agnes or Ferg or anybody. I'm going to find out. You know I'm going to find out.
That's okay. It's already going in my head.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Shiva-dabba-doobie, shiva-dabba-doobie, la-la-lo-lo. Oh, no!
And I want you to know
it's
that...
It's out!
That it took the least amount of sweet-talking from Tim to get me to do that to you.
You're all vicious. You've turned on me, you see. I caught you. Yeah, you knew I caught you. I found it, and I did it with the strawberries, see?
We do it out of love, Bob, because we love you.
Yeah, it's tough love, ain't it?
We are going to teach you to say Calliope if it kills you.
Oh, it's Calliope. Don't blame me. Blame Anderson Cooper. They pay him millions of dollars a year to say Calliope. It must be the correct pronunciation.
I watch Anderson Cooper just to see him go into girl giggles. That just gets me every damn
time. I don't think I've seen that.
You have never seen Anderson Cooper dissolve into girl giggles?
No. Yeah, is there a YouTube clip?
I will send you a clip. I will find it for you, and I will send you a clip. It will have you on the floor laughing because he can't stop. And he knows how ridiculous he sounds. And he can't stop.
I mean, is this the little link that's there in the Wikipedia entry by Titters?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But I'll find you the clip because it's grand.
Oh, I need this. I need this.
You do need this.
I'll feel better if I have it.
It embarrasses him to no end. And every once in a while, somebody will get him.
Well, And by the way, alongside Calliope, Carol, Carl on my Facebook page today reminded me of one that I had forgotten completely, and it may very well be the classic of all time.
Yeah.
It was a clip from The Honeymooners where they were rehearsing some sort of a play, and a rich guy was speaking, of course, played by Norton, and he was reading his lines, and he said, "My yachts, my mansions, my string of polyphonies." Polyphonies? What? Norton? That's polo ponies.
Oh, God.
Polyphonies.
Still reminds me of Tony Curtis in that old movie. In yonder castle lies the home of my father, the king.
Yeah, yonder lies the castle of my father, the king.
It doesn't get any better.
No,
my friend. That's
well,
all.
Just be careful. Be careful, Carol. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of dangerous people out there wielding bananas.
Bananas?
Yes.
No.
Oh, wait. Well, I can't let you go. After all of that, we got to do one of these.
You're a good sport, Bob.
Oh, I try.
You took that with style. I'm impervious.
You can't touch me, Calliope. Tim, Calliope. Calliope, 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 Tim.
That's okay. Next time, it'll be somebody else. He'll just recruit another one of the Horn family, and they'll get you.
I see. We have invoked the ancient law of Con Lee and Vendetta. Okay. All right. He wants to play Baron Harkonnen with me? All right. I can do that, Calliope.
Tim, I'm making him on for you, buddy.
Yeah, you'll have me done to a tender turn in no time, Calliope. Now Todd's into it because everybody knows it drives me crazy when people say often, you know, O-F-T-E-N, you know, where you with the silent T, often. Yeah. No, Todd, no, don't. You just stay out of this.
Oh, this is just getting good, Bob.
I got a feeling December is going to be a merry month, Carol.
We love you.
I love you. Oh, wait a minute. Hi, Barbie.
She's listening, too. She's got you on timer now.
You know, all these years of just sort of quietly putting my little pet peeves out there are, yeah, okay, it's all, the chickens are coming home to the roof, coming home to roost. In the chat room, I'm seeing often, irregardless.
Across.
Chimbley. Library.
Nuclear.
Ah! Well, Carol, you have done your evil deed for the evening.
I have. Tim, can I have my quarter now?
Oh, you got a quarter for that?
Hell yeah.
Shit.
Just like downtown.
He's paying the big money now. You know, the Republicans only do nickel a post.
Hey, I am not a cheap date.
Well, hell no. Absolutely not. Carol, you have a wonderful evening, dear.
You too, buddy. Thanks.
See
ya. Good sport.
Bye. It's a small world after all. See, it doesn't affect me at all. No, okay, so it's pretty soon it's going to be that damn Peyton Manning commercial with chicken parm, it tastes so good. Hey, why does Peyton Manning get the cute little ads? Never mind. That one's kind of earwormy, and of course it was evilly and deliberately designed to be so, with the nationwide theme. You know, Nationwide, please understand, Nationwide is not on your side. Oh, no. Oh, no. And Jeremy pointing out regarding previous conversation. In little old northern Vermont, I know many folks who were happy when defenseless Zimmerman got off with murder and were even more happy at the death of that thug bastard, Michael Brown. Because, see, that's how they talk. I got one right here, and everybody knows there's a guy who calls himself the Gateway Pundit. And that guy is named Jim Hoft, and if you're familiar, you know Carol has deconstructed him on a number of occasions. And over there, that guy he lives in a perpetual state of terror that the Blahs are going to come and get him. Yesterday, he posted video of Louis Farrakhan, you know, being Louis Farrakhan, and saying, you know, inflammatory things. Never mind any of that. You have to go down to the comments, and the first comment was just, this is the right wing in America, period. End of sentence. Because Farrakhan in S, well, he said of the Ferguson protests and everything, we gonna die anyway, let's die for something. And he said that if the demands of the Ferguson protesters, you know, what demands aren't met, we'll tear this goddamn country apart. Right? So some terrified right winger, and this has really brought out the worst of the right wing, and I know that seems like a mathematical impossibility because they're just at their worst all the time, but no, really, they took it up to 11. Let's get it going, Farrakhan. It will be surprisingly brief, and the end result will be a large reduction in black crime and a large reduction in the money our government wastes on human parasites who would not rather get their hair did, smoke drugs, and search out booty calls than do actual work. This is your white America. Cherish it. Back to the phones. We got Haley. Hey, Haley.
Hey, Bob. It's just been a quiet few days here in the land of cotton, pun intended, of course.
Oh, dear God, you are now, aren't you?
Yes. He's the future Lindsey Graham of Arkansas is, of course, all concerned about the alleged raft of terrorists that are coming across the Mexican border, which are, of course, not happening.
No. Well, and the terrorists coming across the Mexican border, they're armed with Ebola and ISIS or something, aren't they? I mean, he's really going for the trifecta.
Yes, I'm sure that there's also probably going to be a couple of other little angles he'll work in that scaremongering. But we're having a little up in the northwest part of the state. There's an election next week. We've already had the statewide elections here in Arkansas, and that didn't turn out really good at all. And the city of Fayetteville, back in the summer, passed a non-discrimination ordinance that would protect, it was actually added to the existing ordinance that protected people based upon sex and racial groups. And this was going to add sexual orientation and gender identity. And it did pass the Fayetteville City Council by a substantial vote. It wasn't unanimous, but it was a substantial vote. But there was 10 hours of testimony for and against this.
Oh, for God's sake.
Well,
was there the inevitable bathroom discussion had?
Oh, the bathroom discussion was thrown out. Was used. There was a lot of fear mongering. I watched it via the interweb tubes. It ended at 3:30 in the morning, local time, the meeting, and it passed. and there were still people wanting to testify.
And that's a, you know, that's a great moment in Arkansas history, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it's not over yet, because the opponents of the ordinance, they threw together enough signatures, and they hemmed and hawed and made a fuss. They got it on the ballot, and it's going to be a repeal vote. And it's the way it was worded, it's going to be the for vote is to repeal the ordinance, and to keep the ordinance, it's an against vote. And there's been a lot of the money thrown around. The Duggars threw $10,000 toward the opposition.
Oh, dear God.
Yes, $10,000.
Is that the source of the call for them to be removed from broadcast now?
Yes, that's a lot of it right there.
Okay, so let's talk a little mathematics for a minute, Haley. Mrs. Duggar has pushed out how many little quiver babies? 19?
20-something, I think. I'm not sure. I'm not exactly...
Okay, you know, when you get up into numbers like that, you've got a reasonable statistical likelihood that one of those children is going to be gay, and one of those children may be transgendered.
Yeah, it's not surprising. And of course, the one of the sons, he's out running around with the Family Research Council doing his own hate tours.
Oh God.
He was up in Conway, Arkansas a month ago, where he was doing a little bus tour with the FRC group, and they invited their sitting state senator, Jason Rapard, and of course a couple of country music, former big time country music stars. One of them was Ricky Skaggs, and another one named Barbara Fairchild, who last I understand, I listened to a radio interview that she did about a month ago, and she's doing gigs at a... I'm not making this up, Bob. They've got a stage at... Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm sorry. Golden Corral in Branson.
Why did I know we were going to Branson, Haley?
Because...
Why did I just know we were going to Branson?
Because it's a beeline from Conway stand to Branson.
Oh, Jesus. You know, and a dear friend of mine just spent the Thanksgiving weekend. They do a getaway with friends every year somewhere nice, and they just did their Thanksgiving getaway in Hot Springs, and apparently had a lovely, lovely time of it. But you know, wherever, no matter how nice it is, and Hot Springs is certainly a resort town and has been for a very long time. No matter where you are, though, you're never far from somebody with a Confederate battle flag in the back of the pickup truck, as long as you're in Arkansas, right?
That's very true. Even in my hometown, you can't hit a dead cat without it seeing a church or either a Confederate battle flag or a Gadsden flag.
The snake, that snake flag.
Yeah, the snake.
That snake handling flag. Oh my
snakey
God.
Snakey snake.
Yeah, and you know when I point that out, I'm not making light of Arkansas, because you know we're like... You know, we're like twins, West Virginia and Arkansas, because it goes all the way back to the 2004 presidential election, when the Republican National Committee sent flyers out to two states saying that John Kerry was going to eat your Bible or something, and the two states they sent it to were West Virginia and Arkansas. They didn't even think it would play in Mississippi, Haley.
Well, that's true. But anyway, back to Fayetteville. And this is that vote that's going to go on, that's going to occur next Tuesday, and there's early voting that started today. Well, last night there was some vandalizing of some campaign signs, and there was one sign I seen that was posted that was the vote against repeal sign that somebody wrote the word fag on it.
Well, of course.
And, also,
and I don't mean to minimize by saying that, Haley, but I mean really. Well, of course.
That's not surprising. And also not surprising is the fact that the opposition to the ordinance, the campaign prior to the vote, had bought a bunch of domains, including a domain, FairFayetteville.com. They bought that domain, and one of the local TV stations in the Fayetteville area reported that, and I seen that via the Facebook feed.
Now, for people not necessarily familiar with Arkansas culture and stuff, let's understand, Fayetteville is not just some town. Fayetteville is the home of the University of Arkansas, correct?
Yes, it's the home of the flagship campus of the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville.
And
except it's not called University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, it's the University of Arkansas.
Right. Right. No, I mean, that is the university, by God, of Arkansas. And it's not like that's a little tiny campus with, you know, 500 or 600 students wandering around.
And this is the same campus that Razorback Stadium is located at. It's the same campus
We're talking about a student population of some several thousands of human beings, right?
About 25,000 students.
Yeah.
And then there's a culture, and then the town of Fayetteville itself is somewhat of a progressive, moderately progressive enclave. Whereas, now in, you go towards Springdale, and there's sort of a corridor from Fayetteville, and the next door, and you know, Fayetteville is probably, I think, is the third, maybe either the third largest or second largest city in Arkansas now. Probably second behind Little Rock. And then next door to Fayetteville is Springdale, and it's about 60,000 people. But Springdale is a little bit more conservative, and it's mostly in the same county that Fayetteville was in, but it straddles a little bit into Benton County. And, of course, Benton County to the north is home of Walmart.
Oh, I knew I recognized that name. Bentonville,
Walmart.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Bentonville. Bentonville, Rogers, and then in that county, there's also to the west of there near the Oklahoma line is a little fundy college called John Brown University in Solomon Springs.
So, but Fayetteville-wise, 25,000 students. I'm guessing at least one of those 25,000 students is probably gay. Maybe two.
Several. I know.
There might even be like an LGBTQQ support group on that campus.
Yes, there
right?
is. Yes, there is. And Fayetteville's been holding pride events longer than Little Rock has.
And so these culture warriors of the right wing are what?
There's some in Fayetteville, but there's a lot of what the opposition are getting help from outside of town, from the Springdale area, from Little Rock, from Cotton, you know, from I don't doubt that there'll be some sure enough voter fraud with and some shenanigans pulled. I just don't have a good feeling about this election.
Are y'all gonna have to use video games to vote on? Or I mean, you're not in Fayetteville, obviously. But
no, I'm halfway between Fayetteville and Starkville, Mississippi.
Man, talk about being between the devil and the deep blue sea.
Actually, don't laugh about Starkville. Starkville has.
Oh no! I've been to Starkville. I know Starkville.
Stark Vegas.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, given that Fayetteville is trying to fight to keep their ordinance. And Little Rock has not adopted one yet.
I don't see that happening in Little Rock, frankly.
No, Little Rock, they're still living with the memories of the Clintons up there.
Really? Because Little Rock considers itself downright cosmopolitan, I reckon.
Yeah, they try to be, and they are in a lot of respects. And I lived there. I lived there for a couple of years. And Little Rock has its good place, but they have a instead of a city council form of government, they have a board of directors and a city manager form of government. And a lot of the power structure in Little Rock is based in West Little Rock, and there's a lot of 1% and 5% influence. So a lot of old money and a lot of new money influences disproportionately the city government of Little Rock. And Fayetteville's city government, in contrast, is a little bit more democratic. And they have a mayor who is who was pushing for the non-discrimination ordinance. And what is interesting, another take on this, was that the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce came out against this ordinance. And they were campaigning against it. And some of the members of the businesses that were members of it questioned the Chamber of Commerce doing so. So this is going to be a big news story then for the next week or so here in Arkansas. Even though I'm down here in the southern part of the state.
Right, right. Well, I tell you what, I appreciate the update, and you know, I hope they can keep this thing alive, you know, because how is a community not better when it's more welcoming to everybody and guards everybody's rights? Of course, it goes without saying, but we're going to say it anyway, that the prime opponents of this equality measure in Fayetteville are to be found on any given Sunday in pulpits all around the community preaching the love and saving grace of Jesus Christ. Am I correct?
Yes, and tax-free, of course.
Yeah, right. Because Jesus, who wore a dress, hates cross-dressers.
that's one way to put it. And if they only knew the truth. I mean, it's also an ironic. The timing of this is Saturday will be 45 years since one of the more larger events that has ever occurred in Fayetteville, Arkansas occurred. And that, of course, was that football game with Texas by 1 point, where one sitting president, a future president, and two governors were there, and it became a big cultural thing and there's been a book written about that. There's been a couple of documentaries made about that. And of course, the usual conspiracy theories and urban legends.
Wow. Amazing. Well, Haley, you have yourself a wonderful evening. Thanks for the update, and we'll talk. And by the way, who's the puppy in the background?
That's Biscuit. He is he's just taking it easy tonight. He's actually about 6 years old.
Oh, what is he?
He is part lab, part German Shepherd, part Golden Retriever. He's basically a rescue dog.
Oh, sounds like a dandy, though.
He is. He just likes attention.
Well, it's there in the chat room right now. Carol Baker said, "We like Biscuit."
Yes. But I don't think he would like Biscuit World very good, though, from what you've said.
Oh, no, just no.
What would possess a company to use that term when its products were just, well, you know.
No, I understand, and bear in mind, we've got a grievance, we've got a gripe, because back when he was a little boy, my father would take Ferg with him, and they'd go down on Sunday and get breakfast at Tudor's Biscuit World. And it was my father who taught my son to love his eggs done sunny side up, and you take, you know, and you sop with the biscuit in the yolk, and, you know, sunny side up eggs.
Yeah.
Well, we walked in there now a couple of months back, and he ordered his sunny side up. Well, you can't have them that way. And honest to God, one of the traveling middle road managers came out to give Ferg Hail Columbia and explain how dangerous it was to eat sunny side up eggs. Yeah, see, Biscuit didn't like it either.
No, he doesn't.
And now on their sign it says, you walk in and breakfast special, eggs any way you want it. But they put on their, you know, asterisk, but not sunny side up. Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Was that with an asterisk, or was that just a regular disclaimer?
No, they drew the asterisk, but not sunny side up. Now on their website, it still says you can have eggs anyway. And at other Tudor's Biscuit Worlds, you can have eggs anyway. But at this one, by God, you can't have your egg sunny side up. Because it's unhealthy. And this is a place that makes its fortune selling sausage and biscuits.
Yeah.
But sunny side eggs, right. Yeah.
The goddess of irony is always around.
Oh, she is. She is.
365 days a week, regardless of any size broadcasting antenna.
And there you go. There you go. So, so that's, you know, that's Biscuit World. And you know, even, you know, back when he was alive, my father would sit down with, you know, sometimes I'd go with him. You know, I let him go by themselves because it was boy to, you know, grandfather, grandson time. But sometimes I'd go and my father would look down at those and said, I swear they must be using bandy roosters for these eggs. What he meant was, you know, because they were almost invisible, you know, roosters, eggs, get it? Yeah,
I'm surprised they're even using real eggs. I mean, a lot of these places you go into, and if it's scrambled eggs, they're not exactly eggs, if you know what I mean.
No, that's that powdered, mixed up, whatever, yeah. See, apparently this has gotten under Devin's skin. He's like, call the main office and raise hell. You know, if it was worth the time, it would. But, I mean, they weren't great eggs in the first place. It was just one of those doing service to memory kind of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, forget it. So, But, that's Tudor's Biscuit World.
I don't think I'll be putting him on my bucket list anytime. West Virginia.
No. If you get to West Virginia, I'll tell you where to go to breakfast.
I'll keep that in mind. I'm definitely, though, if I do get to Western Alabama and Tuscaloosa, I'm definitely going to have to do
Dreamland?
The original Dreamland location.
Oh, you got to. You just got to. I've had ribs in a lot of places. I've never had ribs any better than what comes from there. And part of it's the sauce, and part of it's the mythos of the place. It's just awesome. And when you do look up and you say, I need a second rack, second slab, whatever, they do laugh. They go, yeah, we know it. It's some kind of good. And, you know, not crazy expensive either. I mean, you know, you're in and out for $20 or so.
I mean, nowadays, I mean, you can spend $10 for a sandwich. You know, it's that crazy anymore.
You can take a family of four through the drive-thru at McDonald's and be out, you know, and it ain't nothing to be down $50 for it.
I won't even darken a door of our local McDonald's here because, back in March, they summarily fired a young trans woman because she used the restroom, which wasn't even physically attached to the McDonald's location. It was a combination McDonald's slash convenience store, and the restroom was in between. And the franchise happens to be owned by a right-wing Republican.
Well, of course it is.
And he owns all of them in this part of Arkansas and several in the Little Rock area. And they're poisoning me like Chick-fil-A is. Speaking of Chick-fil-A, unfortunately, our local high school band has been invited to play in next year's Hate Chicken Bowl in Atlanta.
Oh, the Hate Filet Bowl?
Yeah, the Hate Filet Bowl, formerly known as the Peach Bowl.
I liked it better when it was the Peach Bowl.
I remember when it was the new Peach Bowl for a couple of years. That was cheesy.
Well, I mean, the Peach Bowl has a pretty long history, and Westford and the Mountaineers have a special history with it too. We went to the Peach Bowl big underdogs to play Florida one year, all the way back when Charlie Pell, or was it Charlie Pell or Galen Hall was the coach, and Florida was heavily favored, and we went in there and just stomped the beat Jesus out of them, and it was a beautiful thing. And then of course it wasn't the Peach Bowl, but it was played in the Georgia Dome when we went down and handed Georgia its butt, and good feelings. You know, hillbillies can make the trip to Atlanta pretty easy.
But the Shreveport Bowl, which used to be the Independence Bowl, they've got a new sponsor this year.
Oh no, I remember when it was the Poland Weed Eater. Poland Weed Eater Bowl, right?
It was a Weed Eater Bowl, and then it became the some Advil 100 Bowl. Guess who's sponsoring it now?
I'm afraid.
Quack, quack.
Oh, no, really?
Duck Commander.
No, stop it. I thought you were going to say it was like the Aflac Bowl. And I was like, I thought they already had it.
No. Worse. No, it's the Duck Commander Bowl.
Really? It's the Duck Doofus Bowl now?
The same Duck Doofus bunch. It's the Duck Commander Bowl.
It'll be interesting. Ah, Jesus.
The bowl games are like boxing titles. They're just too many and too meaningless.
Well, but I mean, it's a fun way to end the season. I hope the playoff thing works out well. I would like to have seen it be more than four teams. They always put forward that silly argument about how these are student athletes. They got classes to go to. And yet, oddly enough, Division II manages to have a playoff system that spans like one, two, three, four levels, I think. Go figure.
Yeah, the college I went to was it's Division II now. It used to be NAIA. And NAIA had a playoff system, and then Division II has a playoff system, and then there's one in Division III. And FCS, which is the small Division I schools, they have a playoff system, a full blown playoff system.
In fact, for a very long time, the Division II national championship was held in my hometown. It has since moved to like Kansas City or somewhere. I was surprised to find that out because I always enjoyed seeing the old home stadium.
I'm sure you've probably heard about what's happening in Birmingham with the Alabama Birmingham Blazer football program.
No, what?
They're going to be disbanded.
Really?
It's very rumored. It's I've not seen anything officially yet, but there's reports out that they are dropping football.
Bad behavior, just not worth the money? What?
I think it was the administration and maybe the powers that be at the state level. A lot of pressure to...
And see, that's the thing. Because it's part of the University of Alabama system, there has always been a lot of hate for that program coming from Tuscaloosa.
And there's a campus in Little Rock, University of Arkansas, Little Rock, and they've never been allowed to have a football program. And they have basketball, but they've never had football. Now the UA Monticello has football, UA Pine Bluff, which is a historically black college university, has football, but not UA Little Rock. And I think, and there's a
so
lot.
So they're gonna
of,
they'll ditch the football program, but probably not the hoops, right?
They'll probably keep basketball. But I think that it's just a matter of time when.
There's not a lot of distance between Birmingham and Tuscaloosa. So you and Birmingham, of course, Alabama's biggest city, and you don't want all those Birminghamians developing loyalties to UAB when they need to be getting in the car and driving, 70 miles to Tuscaloosa. See how it works?
Yeah, I see. There's so much, I don't know. Now, Arkansas is unique as far as our media culture here because the media in central Arkansas gives very little coverage to, even though it is, University of Central Arkansas is FCS. They don't get hardly any media coverage, and they get some in football, and none in basketball, even though they're Division I. UALR gets some media coverage in basketball, but it's usually they're the third or fourth story after U of A and or.
Oh no! I mean, Arkansas is all about its hogs, right?
It's hog country.
Yeah. And of course, the legendary Frank Broyles. And I was thinking the other day, I remember a time when, and I guess it was a fairly brief time, but it was a couple of years at least, when ABC teamed up Keith Jackson for their college football broadcast. They teamed up Keith Jackson with Frank Broyles. And if you can find audio of it, it is magic. Because it was like two old Southern boys explaining to the entire nation how to speak football.
I remember watching games with Keith Jackson doing play by play, and then Frank doing the color commentary.
Yeah. It's war in the trenches, and Frank would say, "Keith, I think he may be the finest football player I've ever seen in my life." And it was just beautiful. I mean, it was art for what it was.
I miss ABC Sports. I absolutely do. I have missed.
Oh, but the fact that I had to, I mean, there was no way I was going to miss the Iron Bowl last Saturday night, and I got to sit. I tried putting on Eli Gold on via the internet, but the latency was such that what I was hearing from Eli Gold was happening, 152 seconds. After what I'd seen on the TV screen, so it was just madness. And why? I mean, what can nobody? Can nobody at ESPN, ABC, Disney, whatever, just tell creepy old Brent Musburger to take it to the showers?
I think the only thing that would have been worse would have been putting Musburger and that sexual. Harasser Ron Franklin as color commentary.
Oh, mercy.
You know what he was doing? I was at my dad's for Thanksgiving. Well, they've kind of relegated Ron Franklin to doing third-tier basketball tournaments in the Bahamas now.
The Atlanta.
And this is what was funny. And Dad was watching this for a little bit, and I was up there. They were playing... They were trying to portray the ESPN. They were trying to portray this as an arena, and it was actually this ballroom at a casino, and they had the lighting where it would only light lit up the court, and the rest of it had the blue lighting around the court, and the crowd part was kind of blue and red lighting. And then I kind of noticed, and I just almost chuckled when they show it at the, you know, the players were coming out of the quote unquote arena. It would have Royal Ballroom number 3.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. And, anyway, enough sports talk. I'm sure everybody is,
I don't know.
Reaching for their,
I'll get
at this point.
But it wasn't all football. And like I said last night, I'm conflicted now. I mean, the injuries, the head injuries, that horrifying story out of Columbus, Ohio, just heartbreaking. But that's okay. You know, we'll talk about opera or competitive knitting or something like that, and everybody will be happy. But Haley, it's good to hear from you.
Oh, great. Hey, Ben, it's been a pleasure, and, I probably won't be in Friday on Front Porch this week since I have a little bit of free time this weekend, so maybe in a week or two.
Well, hot diggity. Maybe, hey, road trip to Tuscaloosa.
No, not this time. I'm just probably going to be keeping plans a little bit closer to home.
Sounds good, Haley. You have a good evening.
Okay, bye.
Right, bye now. Haley calling from Arkansas. You got it. You know, we rednecks, we'll talk about college football. We can't help it. It's baked in. Let's see here. We are at 9 minutes before the hour. We were looking to raise $250 this evening to match two challenges on the table. One from our dear friend Tom in the Bay Area, the Keep the Indian Angry Challenge, followed by an anonymous challenge put forward of $150, a chance to double your contribution dollar. And apparently not too many people want to see that happen because we had $250 and we are at $5. If you would like to double your money, if you would like to double your contributory power and help us get a little bit in decent shape for the beginning, because, you know, we're even right now, decent shape for the beginning of December, this would be a great time. And the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com, or you can log into your own PayPal and just use bobkincaid@gmail.com. That's what the account's tied to. Choose sending money to friends or families, and they won't even stick you with the fees. A lot of people do that. It's kind of handy. Let's take a little break. It's Tuesday. We have the Green News Report coming up, and I don't want to miss that. I enjoy the heck out of it. This is Conversation Radio. That's what we call what we do here. This is The Horn. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Give to me my time and money. Give to me my milk and honey. Give to me my self-respect. Golden chains around my neck. Give to me my supermodel. Corporate jet and champagne bottle. Get me out there on the town. Let me spread my wealth around. I could learn to love this life I lead. But just don't take away the things I need. I feel rosy in the pink. So just don't make me stop and think. All those dark thoughts in my head seem like better left unsaid. Burn with passion. Give to me my charm and wit. Keep my body young and fit. Give to me my haute couture. Give the world a cancer cure. Serve my breakfast al fresco. Let the wine and liquor flow. I can search for truth some other time. But right now I just wanna get what's mine. Let the gangsters rule. Try to make ends meet. I despise all bleeding hearts. I don't patronize the arts. Give it to me. Give it to me.
understand what it is you're trying to sell me, or what it is you're trying to tell me. You're trying to get me to show some compassion. Man, that's so out of fashion. Give to me my Aspen winner. Sorry about the World Trade Center. I can't help the ones in need. I got my own mouth to feed. Give to me my Playboy channel. Some killer weed and sheets of flannel. Lay me down upon my bed with pleasant dreams to fill my head. Just look at what this world is coming to. And there ain't one damn thing that I can do. I don't have a leg to stand on. I don't have a net to land on. I don't have the base of power. I don't have the extra hour. Give it to me. Give it to me. Give it to me. Give it to me right now. Give to me my tax cut outsource. Build me my golf course, the Dixie Chicks can kiss my ass, but I still need that backstage pass. Give to me my NASDAQ numbers, Intel shells and E-Trade blunders, soldiers to defend my freedom, and a strip of Valium if I need them. And give it to me, give it to me, give it to me right now.
It's Tuesday, December 2nd, 2014.
The window for action is rapidly closing.
UN Climate Summit underway to map the future of global warming.
9 miles of the Pacific Coast Highway west of Los Angeles are still blocked by mud and debris.
California hit by record rain in the midst of record drought.
Oil prices dropped again yesterday.
The global implications of falling oil prices, plus...
The hospital mortuary can't cope with the dead body.
The toxic legacy of the world's worst industrial accident 30 years later.
All of those industrial accidents and toxic legacies straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We can't shift that scientific reality. So what we have to do is shift the political reality.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Is it my imagination, or is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation getting into our snarky comment game? Yeah, well, good luck with that. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, just so our listeners out here in California do not get alarmed, that stuff that is falling out of the sky, that is known as rain. and it has been falling here now for a couple of days, which is something that people who may have moved here 2 or 3 years ago have never seen before.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking that finally California, amid a record drought, is now finally getting some rain. Record rain, no less, although it's nowhere near enough to end the record drought.
It is causing all kinds of problems, however, given the fact that we haven't had any substantial rain for about the past 3 years in the midst of this record drought. So we've had wildfires, the ground is scorched, and now we're seeing mudslides and a lot of evacuations up and down northern and southern California.
Yep, it's the swing in extreme weather events, from extreme drought to extreme rain.
I wish someone had warned us about all of this. Speaking of which, what else do you have for us today?
Funny you should ask. Today, in Lima, Peru, the United Nations Climate Summit is now underway for the next 2 weeks in the next phase of negotiations to achieve a binding international treaty to cut global greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warming.
The longer we delay, the more difficult, the more intractable, and the more expensive actions will be.
That was UN Chief Scientist Dr. Rajendra Pachauri, again warning the delegates that time is running out. They're attempting to achieve a binding international treaty to cut greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warming, even as global warming is already changing weather patterns around the world.
Or, as the Australian Broadcasting Corporation might say...
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
Well, this phase of negotiations is getting to the brass tacks, divvying up responsibilities of who will cut emissions, how much and how soon, and how those cuts will be verified going forward. Thanks to the recent historic agreement between the U.S. and China to cut their emissions, the diplomats say they're optimistic that other nations will follow through as well, increasing the odds of an effective treaty to be signed in Paris next year. But there's a catch.
Oil prices dropped again yesterday, this time approaching $70 a barrel after the OPEC cartel decided not to cut production levels. Prices for crude have dropped by more than 30% since the summer.
That's good news for drivers and the U.S. economy, but it has serious implications for climate change and for volatile countries whose budgets are based on fossil fuel revenue, like Iran, Venezuela, and Russia. On PBS NewsHour, oil industry analyst Kevin Book says OPEC may be trying to put pressure on U.S. oil producers.
A lot of our new oil, the shale oil and the oil from other type formations that you hear so much about, actually is a little bit expensive relative to the world market.
Analysts say OPEC may be trying to starve out U.S. oil producers who have very low profit margins. Finally, this week marks a sober anniversary, 30 years since the disaster in Bhopal, India, the worst industrial tragedy in world history, when a massive cloud of poison gas leaked from a Union Carbide pesticide factory into the city.
The hospital mortuary can't cope with the dead body.
It was the worst industrial disaster in history. On that toxic night in December 1984, the wind direction determined whether you lived or died. Within 3 days, 8,000 people were dead. Tens of thousands more died later. 500,000 ingested the poison and survived.
The toxic legacy continues today with high rates of severe birth defects and cancers. The plant is still there 30 years later, still leaking toxic chemicals, but U.S.-based Dow Chemical, which bought Union Carbide after the disaster, says it is not responsible for cleaning up the toxic site.
Listening to some of the old reports, this note from John Cochrane on NBC News back in 1984 as the disaster was unfolding is troubling, to say the least.
Another accident on this scale seems unlikely, but India does not have enough skilled workers and inspectors to enforce safety regulations. So industrial safety will largely be left up to the conscience of Western companies here.
For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we could not get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download our reports anytime via iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And the time will come when you see we're all one and life flows on within you and without you.
Letting go now, letting go now. Brad and Desi do such a wonderful job with the Green News Report. Thank you very kindly to both of them for this long-term continuing effort of theirs. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course. This is The Horn. It is Titanic Tuesday, in which we celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing. And my, haven't we been doing some celebrating this evening. And, yes, we're trying to raise $245 to match $250 worth of the challenges out there to double so folks can double their money. So far, only Sal, who is there so often, has gotten involved in the fundraising. Thank you, Sal. If nine other folks at $10 a piece or 18 folks at $5 will join you, then we will double your contribution, and that will meet Tom's keep the Indian angry challenge for this evening. Let's see where to go. Oh, by the way, well, how about some mail? Got a note in from our buddy Scott in Sweden. Scott heard the discussion of Elizabeth Loughton, public Republican scold, and how she upbraided the Obama daughters for not appearing sufficiently, I guess, white at the turkey pardoning ceremony. Scott writes, here in Sweden, when the teenagers have to be with their parents doing something as lame as what Sasha and Malia had to go through, the preferred phrase is embarrassing parental behavior. There are over 162,000 hits in Swedish. It It is so past time to end the stupid turkey pardoning, as it is nothing more than a commutation of the miserable bird to death by organ failure. These overfed birds die of planned obesity within 2 years. Their wild cousins live for 12. And yet, right, let's understand something. These big white plumed turkeys. I mean, I live in turkey country. Occasionally, it's also bat country. But I live in turkey country. We got lots of wild turkeys in the woods here, and none of them are snow white. And in their natural coloring, they're kind of a noble and majestic bird. Remember, Ben Franklin wanted it to be the national bird instead of the bald eagle, which, of course, turns out to have been presciently chosen as the national bird because the bald eagle never fights anything its own size and prefers to prey on dead things. Oh, well. Maybe the greatest social good the Obama daughters have ever done is to point out just exactly how stupid, how utterly, utterly damn dumb the turkey pardoning is. And this note coming in from Kim. I must tell you, Bob, I really appreciated Dr. O'Brien's program last night. I was up at 3 a.m. bottle feeding 3 5-day-old kittens that Ray and I are fostering from our local shelter, where I volunteer much of the time. So interesting was he that I stayed up listening until the end at 4 a.m. Terrific. I so agree with his talk about the politicians of the past being groomed for their place in history. It is sad today that our office holders now only give bullets in their campaigns and are so underqualified to hold the offices we elect them to. Fascinating history on the Adams family, too. I'm making Ray replay it as I write this. Thanks for the great history lesson, Kim. Thank you, Kim. Thank you very kindly. Yesterday and today were both magnificent examples of what Dr. Bill does. There's absolutely nobody doing what he does. There just isn't. On a regular, routine basis, nobody. Nobody. And I want to back up for a minute. I want to back up to share a little moment of history with you from yesterday. I had this saved, but we didn't get to it because the conversation was so rousing and Jim Dandy good last night. This comes via Dr. Robert Bliss, who is a friend of Dr. Bill's, and sends out a This Day in History observation every day. And these things are just brilliant. I mean, just brilliant. And yesterday, December 1st, seemed particularly noteworthy because it's a reminder that America does not have to be the tawdry mess that it is, that there is a way for people to have human dignity, to have a decent living. And Dr. Bob Bliss writes, December 1st is the birthday of one of St. Louis's most distinguished native sons, Gerard Swope, who was born here into an immigrant Jewish watchmaker's family on December 1st, 1872. Gerard showed a precocious talent for electricity and for social work, and after graduating from MIT, found his life's work in electrics and his life's wife, Mary Hill, at Jane Addams's famous Hull House, where for a time Gerard taught poor people how to make and repair electric motors. After marrying Mary in Mackinac at an Addams summer camp, Gerard moved on from Hull House to Western Electric and then, in 1920, to General Electric, where, as CEO, he transformed the company, advocated trade unions, and involved them in management planning, arguing for a full employment economy and, one could say, getting himself and the country ready for Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal. When the Depression came, Swope and the GE unions negotiated employment stabilization so the company could maintain its workforce, and in 1934, an unemployment insurance and pension scheme that also extended profit sharing started by Swope in the mid-1920s to the whole workforce. Swope had already, in the 1920s, instituted GE involvement in cooperative housing ventures wherever it had significant industrial plant operations. Hull House, we might say, trained its sons well. Or was it MIT? Or perhaps it was Isaac and Ida Swope, those immigrant parents, who also, by the way, birthed a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Herbert Swope. Anyway, it seems to me that St. Louis and Missouri might still have a few lessons to learn from this Swope boy. A few indeed. Dig that. Imagine, because you can't. It is almost unimaginable in 2014 that a CEO of a corporation would argue for things like a full employment economy. That he would insist upon having trade unions in the corporation. That he would insist upon involving workers in management planning of the overall mission of the corporation. It is practically, it's not unthinkable in Germany, it's not unthinkable in Japan, it's not unthinkable maybe South Korea, but it is by God unthinkable in the United States of America. Because they don't teach that at Harvard's School of Business. Understand, please, that the greatest scourge to working people has been, in the modern era, the Harvard School of Business. There's a running gag I have with one of our members of our family commune congregation. We've come to the agreement that MBA from Harvard stands for More Bigger Assholes. Because beginning in the 1970s, the profit maximization models and everything that they taught to these little sons of privilege who were cycling through the Harvard School of Business, getting their MBAs, you know, people like Willard Romney and George W. Bush. That's the mother church of the abuse of the American worker, Harvard's School of Business. Without a doubt. And then this note coming in from our buddy Thomas, Jug of Punch in the chat room. And oh my God. But this is an example of the way right-wingers think, so it fits on Titanic Tuesday. Homeless, down and outs, have tough enough time. Does the public trough really need to fund this? My nominee is New Beginnings founder and CEO Tom Acheson of Tampa, Florida. And refers me to a story headline from the Tampa Bay Tribune, is it? TampaBay.com, any way you slice it. A story by Will Hobson, Dateline Tampa. Headline, Tampa Homeless Program uses unpaid destitute residents as steady labor force revenue source. Okay, just judging by the headline, you go, okay, well, you know, it's great that they can have a job. But then you read the story. Will Hobson writes, before every Tampa Bay Buccaneers home game, dozens of men gather in the yard at New Beginnings of Tampa, one of the city's largest homeless programs. The men, many of them recovering alcoholics and drug addicts, are about to work a concession stand behind Raymond James Stadium's iconic pirate ship, serving beer and food to football fans, paren, I'll add editorially, at wildly inflated prices. First, because it's a sporting event. First, a supervisor for New Beginnings tries to pump them up. Thank God we have these events. They bring in the prime finances. But not for the workers. They leave the game sweat-soaked and as penniless as they arrived. The money for their labor goes to New Beginnings. The men receive only shelter and food. You got that? For years, New Beginnings founder and CEO Tom Acheson has sent his unpaid homeless labor crews to Tampa Bay Rays, Lightning, and Bucks games, the Daytona 500, and the Florida State Fair. For their shelter, he's had homeless people work in construction, landscaping, telemarketing, moving, painting, even grant writing. Tom Acheson calls it work therapy. Homeless advocates and labor lawyers call it exploitative and possibly illegal. It is the latest questionable way Acheson has used homeless people and public money, according to a Tampa Bay Times, not Tribune, Times, investigation. But wait, there's more. Acheson has a new idea. he wants to run the new homeless shelter in Hillsborough County, Florida. And he'll be paid to do it. It's a public contract worth millions of dollars. Mr. Hobson writes, the Times reviewed thousands of pages of public records about New Beginnings, including police reports, bank statements, grant documents, and court proceedings, and interviewed more than 20 current and former New Beginnings residents and employees. Among the findings, and remember, of course, this is being done under the rubric of Christianity. Employees and residents said Atchison took residents. Oh, my God. Get the hockey puck. This isn't a funny get the hockey puck. This is an exit screaming get the hockey puck. Employees and residents said Atchison took residents' social security checks and food stamps, even if they amounted to more than residents owed in program costs. How does a homeless person at a shelter owe program costs? A New Beginnings contractor told the Tampa Bay Times he overbilled the state for at least $80,000 of grant money and then gave the money to the program instead of returning it. While claiming to provide counseling, New Beginnings employs no one clinically trained to work with addicts or the mentally ill. One minister cited his experience running a motorcycle gang as his top qualification. The Times could not verify the doctorate in theology that Atchison said he earned from a defunct online school. Atchison claimed that New Beginnings barely makes enough to cover its costs. And if he didn't have people working for him for free, he'd have to turn other people away. On the other hand, Lee Hoffman, a former New Beginnings resident and minister, and they've always got those sweet, lovely-sounding names, New Beginnings, right? Lee Hoffman was a resident and minister there, and he said, it needs to stop. There are a bunch of homeless people who are being exploited. They just call him P.T., Pastor Tom. We maybe should have saved this for prayer meeting Wednesday, but since tomorrow is the way tomorrow is, and we don't know, so I'm not. New Beginnings in 2013 reported $932,816 in contributions and claimed $823,407 in expenses. You remember how churches are tax-free? Atchison said he only gets paid $18,000 a year. But New Beginnings doesn't list his salary on tax documents. He's paid through the church. And because he's paid through the church, his salary information ain't public. Meanwhile, New Beginnings charges its residents who can pay $150 a week. Or $600 a month. That's rent and three meals a day. Indentured servitude. In 2014. Thomas said, P.S., besides employees and residents at Atchison took residents' Social Security checks and food stamps, even if it amounted to more than residents owed in program costs. Labor lawyers say that a company can compensate employees with shelter and food, but they need to document hours worked and the value of the housing and meals provided to ensure workers earn at least the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. Were payroll taxes paid? That could at least earn credits to collect Social Security checks that could be stolen in the future. Thomas says, I don't think this guy's in it for the long term. Just wow. Wow, indeed. Thanks to Robert in Australia. Robert just took care of Tom's challenge. in whole, in total. Thank you very kindly, Robert. So now that means we've only got our anonymous challenge left to meet, $150 to go, and it would be great in terms of bill paying. Really great. And let's see, where to go? Well, let's go to the phones. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good, you?
I can't complain. Nobody listens.
Yeah, what's the point, right?
Yeah, exactly. Why waste your time? Well, good luck tomorrow.
Well, I appreciate it. I don't know what's going to come of it. You know, obviously, I'm a little bit nervous, but what can you do?
Yeah. I'm having trouble with the 663 number.
Yeah, we are having trouble with it, and I don't know what it is, and I'm going to have to...
I'm not happy to hear you're having trouble, but I'm happy to know I wasn't constantly misdialing. You know, it's like, what kind of day am I having? I got to see the dentist tomorrow, but it's no big deal. It's new teeth, you know.
Oh, that's happening?
Well, yeah, of course it's happening, but I think they're just going to fit me tomorrow. These people are slow. They're nice people. They're a couple of female dentists, and they both went to Case Dental School. When I walked through the door, the one dentist almost dropped her teeth and said how many nights she had spent getting drunk listening to me. That's a good start, you know. I haven't been able to say too much lately. That Missouri thing is just, how disgusting, you know. When we think we were past that kind of stuff. We thought we were through with Emmett Till and the Birmingham church bombing and, you know, fill in the blank, Bob.
But no, the right wing have been driven mad in the last 6 years by the presence of that one in their White House.
Yeah.
But you can't necessarily ascribe all of put that onto, you know, our policing problem. Our policing problem has been a long time coming.
Bob, it's been here a long time.
Well, I mean, you know, early in the program, that story, and it's coming out, you know, coming out of your home turf, it's coming out of Cleveland, that the white Cleveland police officers are claiming that they're being discriminated against because they shot a couple of black guys and that they were punished worse than the black guys who shot the black guys were. I mean, Jesus Christ, Bill. You know?
What shooting was this? Was it after a long auto chase?
Yeah, 2012. Chevy Malibu fired 130 rounds into the automobile, hit the two occupants with 20 rounds apiece, and no gun, no nothing.
Bob, the guys I knew, when I worked at University Circle, we were a popular spot for the guys coming off duty. And guys going on, hell, I bought my first gun from a cop. Like, you can always get them, you know?
Yep.
You got them. And cheap, too. But one of our guys who worked the door, he went out and answered a call on some idiot who was firing a .22 rifle. When he got out of the car, the guy dropped him. And he had been a doorman for us, so I kind of knew him, you know? And the kid had shot him. It took him 4 hours to catch this guy because I can't even describe the area because it's got a big gully where a creek runs. The creek drains an area called Shaker Lakes. And anyhow, to make a long story short, they when they got the guy, the watch commander just grabbed him quick and hustled him into a car because these guys were angry enough to shoot him.
Oh, yeah.
Did they have lost? They had lost one of them. This guy was on the job. And the guys I knew, most of them were Vietnam vets. And they were one guy I used to fish with a lot. And he'd tell me, Bill, when you've been in a situation like Vietnam, you have a whole different attitude about, you know, because he said the people over there knew what the hell they were doing, and they shot back, and they shot well. Although the Tet Offensive wrecked the Viet Cong, you know, the guerrillas, and that's when North Vietnam got heavily involved, you know, because they weren't about to, they had... And General Jep, you know who he is? Was. He just died recently.
Yeah,
he was the commander of the both wars. And he attributed a better force of patrollers and combat, face-to-face jungle combat guys. He thought he rated the French as better. But the truth was the French Foreign Legion in Vietnam in the 50s and late 40s spoke with a German accent, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
Guys who didn't know what to do with themselves anymore. There were guys in D&B and Phu who had fought against Franco. And these guys didn't know what to do with themselves. So they joined up an armed force and shoot it out, you know. Nah, it's too much. I'm working this book on World War One and I listed the city of Vienna and everybody lived there from Hitler to Lenin and Trotsky and Sigmund Freud and it was a fascinating place. That city was, you know, and it was like the three empires were going to fall on their asses. The Kaiser, the Tsar, and the Austrian Emperor, who was so goddamn old, that it was going to be over, you know?
Yeah.
And I still wonder, well, I guess we got into it because the Germans made a comeback in 17 and 18 with manpower that they picked up, that they brought from Russia, you know? Because once the Russians were out of the war, the Germans had brought in a whole fresh load of men to be killed, and, you know, but the German desertion rate was getting higher and higher because men can only take so much of that kind of lifestyle. That was horrible.
Yeah, it was.
So I don't have much interesting to say except, take care of business. And let's hope for the best. I mean, they ran me through when I was 32 because of scar tissue on the vocal cords, you know.
Right.
In the case of a throat specialist, it was easy money to bring you in and have you biopsied, and then they can write it off to... there was a lot of insurance fraud in those days. I don't know how it is today. Because these damn insurance companies won't pay you what they're supposed to, much less be defrauded by a doctor, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm sure these idiots watch every penny, but, you know, you and I know what the answer is. The answer is what the Canadians have and the British. The British went to...
The UK has now caught the American disease. Because the right wing is trying to dismantle the NHS in the UK for all they're worth. And all of these healthcare systems were developed in Europe following the Second World War because it was an absolute necessity.
The First World War.
Well, that's true. But everything was destroyed. Nobody had anything left. And so, you know, what was called socialized medicine, and of course that was a loaded term from the get-go, was born in the UK, and it's been magnificent for the people there. But the right wing, you know, having taken, you know, that the business about America sneezes and the world catches the flu is true, Bill. It's just true. And so now there's two good examples. In the UK, because of American right wingery, which has metastasized across the pond, they're trying to destroy the NHS, the National Health Service. And lo and behold, and I realize this is on a much smaller scale, but they've caught another disease. Now, we like to think that Thanksgiving is a uniquely American holiday, right?
Yeah.
Right. Instituted under Lincoln after a lot of lobbying, and it's, I enjoy it more than any other, more than most holidays because, well, Independence Day and Thanksgiving are not wrapped around religion necessarily, and B, you know, they don't call for you to go out and spend, buy. You know, you put on a nice feast. You know, whatever your ability and you know, however you can, and you sit and you think a little bit about what matters in your world. Well, of course, capitalism got hold of Thanksgiving, and the next thing you knew, we had Black Friday. I followed. I didn't really even comment on them very much. The numbers of stompings and fights and scraps and near riots taking place at American capitalist retail outlets. It was a horror.
On
so-called Black Friday. Yeah, it was a horror. Well, guess what? That has now crossed the pond. Now, the UK doesn't have Thanksgiving as we understand Thanksgiving. They just don't.
Yeah,
I mean, they've got a cool holiday. They sit around and get loaded on the day after Christmas and call it Boxing Day. And Australia does the same, and I think it's a magnificent holiday, and I wish we would adopt it. But they don't have Thanksgiving. But damned if the American retail empire has not imposed Black Friday on the UK. And so, lo and behold, there were the stories on Saturday of people getting... I mean, God damn it, it's England, Bill! And people were stomping each other trying to get a 99-cent 21-inch LC, you know, flat-screen TV or something. People went nuts. And the bobbies or the cops or whatever were all, well, thank you very much, United States. Oh, we, you know, how very lovely of you. But no, another disease. So, you know, to people in Australia, you know, build the wall, watch out. You know, they'll try to, you know, it's like Robert talks about how they've tried to get Halloween to stick over there, and it never has. Well, here comes Black Friday, because you know what? Ruthless, rampant, predatory capitalism knows no boundaries, Bill.
Well, what was Guy Fawkes Day?
What is that? Try to remember. The 12th of November?
He was trying to blow up Parliament.
Yeah, he tried to. Yeah, he was a terrorist, Guy Fawkes was.
Yeah.
But they got that. They got that. We don't have that. But they also don't stamp. They also don't have stampedes at retail stores on Guy Fawkes Day. I don't think. I mean, it's you shoot off fireworks. I mean, it's British. You shoot off fireworks and drink beer for God's sakes.
Yeah. Oh, don't tell me I've got some German dark in the house. I haven't drank beer since I was 18 or 19 years old.
Du hast Dunkel? Yeah, Dunkel, yeah. Dark, yeah, German
no,
dark, Dunkel, dark beer.
It's not that. It's made in Germany, but the St. Pauli girl, from what I learned, is not even brewed in Germany.
I think it is. It's just not brewed in Bavaria. It's got a Bavarian-looking label, but it's brewed in northern Germany. It's brewed by the same people who make Beck's.
You, of course, you know what St. Pauli district is, don't you?
No.
Or was?
No.
Oh, that was the, that was in Hamburg, right? And it was the, what we would, like New Orleans used to have Storyville?
Yeah.
They had St. Pauli district.
I had no idea.
Because when you have a big sea-going area where you had a lot of ships coming in from all over the world, what did you have to have, Bob?
Red light districts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing romantic about it, but it's just, there was a thing on the Union Army, the number of hookers who were following, I don't mean Joe Hooker, Fighting Joe either, the women who were following that army, when they were going up toward Antietam, they stopped at Frederick, Maryland, and the ladies from Washington were right there. Second oldest profession. The first crooks were there, you know, royalty and politicians, you know, the first money takers. And of course, in Cleveland right now, the big, you know what the big deal is?
Well, what, the shooting?
Nope, Manziel.
Oh, Jesus. What's he done now?
No, they want to bring him out. He came into the game the other day, and he did score one touchdown. And what difference did it make it, you know, when the team's already done for, you know?
Right.
And the guy they've got, he doesn't have the arm. See, I'm spoiled. All I know is when I started following professional football, the quarterback, the Cleveland Browns, had the old-fashioned name of Otto and the second name of Graham. And I saw a lot of, and Sammy Ball had just retired a few years before that with Washington. In fact, the 45 championship game was played in Cleveland after a big snowstorm, and it was the Cleveland Rams who next year moved to Los Angeles, and the Washington Dead Things. I hate to use their real name, because that's another name that ought to be changed, you know? It's just out of, the whole thing is out of date. And you hear people defending the use of that name, but yeah, Manziel, the Manziel fans want him to get a chance, and he doesn't have much of an arm either, to be honest with you. But he's a running quarterback, and you know, that seems to be the rage all of a sudden.
Well, until they can't run anymore.
Yeah, well, look at the man in Washington, RG3. A buddy of mine played football in Maryland. He was one of the owners of the Eagle Tavern. He played defensive end and stood next to Randy White, who was in the Hall of Fame, the Dallas tackle.
Oh, God, and Randy White's out there now hustling the hustling computer antivirus systems on TV. And take it from me, Randy White. I played football. To protect your computer against viruses. And who thought this was a good idea?
Yeah, well, pick him. I mean,
I know. Was there a dartboard and a bottle of rot gut liquor involved in that decision? I mean, what?
Yeah. The whole NFL thing has gotten past. Hey, Bob, when I broke up my house in Lake County after a divorce, I had a box of pro football magazines that I would buy every July and study them and read them. Of course, I never gambled on the game because it was all I heard from older guys in the 50s. It's fixed. It's rigged. And whatever it takes, I'm not a gambler, Bob, but when it comes to money, yeah, I'll gamble on whether I get a good meal or not. In fact, one of the Cavaliers kids, one of the old original Cavaliers kids has opened a New Orleans-style place on the west side of Cleveland.
Oh, yummy.
And I don't mean a Cajun place. I mean a crawfish étouffée and that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And
is he trying his hand at a muffaletta?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen the menu yet. I haven't been over there. You got to find somebody.
I'll be honest. I love a muffaletta, and you know, down at the joints in New Orleans where you can get, oh, they're magnificent. But you know, in a town like Cleveland where a muffaletta would have to compete against one of those 9-inch tall corned beef sandwiches, I don't know who wins.
Yeah.
I don't know who would know. Oh God, now I'm thinking about the corned beef. You see what you do to me, Bill? You see what you do?
Did you ever hear Lenny Bruce? You know who he is?
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, he grew up in the New Jersey area and spent a lot of time there, and he used to go into a sub place and order a big, they had a sandwich they called the Big Dago. And he commented, and I said, I can see myself in Chicago walking into a sub shop and asking for a big Dago sandwich. And You see, the only sandwich I'll get will have knuckles attached
well,
to it.
Well, ain't that the truth? And I mean, I remember that word being attached to there was a little place. Oh, it's outside of Morgantown in West Virginia. And remember, in the recruitment of a workforce for the coal mines in late 19th century, early 20th century Appalachia, all kinds of people were imported, and some people were even shanghaied here. We've talked about that in the past. But in southern West Virginia, you got an importation of African Americans from the south. In northern West Virginia, you had a much higher concentration of Italians and Eastern Europeans, and some Spaniards and Greeks. There was a little place outside of Morgantown, opened up at 11 o'clock at night. And to somebody who was cracking the books in law school, that's about when you knock off for late lunch. And we'd go there, and it opened up because that's when the shift change happened at the nearby mine. And they had and he had a thing on his omelet. Well, he did pancakes that were bigger than the plates. And the guy was 86 years old at the time, and working to put his daughter through medical school, or his granddaughter or something. I mean, it was an inspiring story. But by God, he was 86 years old, and he got up and went into his kitchen every night at 11 o'clock, opened up, and I mean, put on a feed. And he made flapjacks that were bigger than the plates. He brought the butter to this table already melted, you know, the syrup, but he did an omelet. And it was an omelet with pepperoni and onions and green peppers and mushrooms and marinara sauce. And he called it, and it was just on the menu, that word, omelet.
Yeah.
And you know, the guys with the vowels on the end of their names would come in and go, yeah, I want a, and there was, who knows, but all I know is the damn thing was tasty.
Well, see, that's one thing about this country. Like, I talked to my one aide that I have now. She's a real good woman, and I'll say, look, the one thing about the States is there was nasty names for every group in the world. Polacks. Oh, my God, Polish jokes were the rage in the 1960s.
I remember we were educating Sergi a couple of nights ago about All in the Family.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, Archie was the perfect caricature of the lower working class bigots, white bigots. And yeah, because one of the running gags is that he would constantly berate Michael Stivic for his Polish heritage. Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah. But I want to make sure that everybody gets into the program. It's good to hear from you, Bill, and good luck.
There's
at the
hang in there and good luck to Mom, my friend.
Well, thank you, and good luck at the dentist. I want to hear good and wonderful things about all the stuff that you're grinding through.
Well, I'm moving ahead. A friend of mine just brought over a nice-sized artificial tree with lights on it, and that's... Well, I can't hide from being too Germanic, you know?
Oh, no.
You gotta
of course
have
not.
That Tannenbaum, buddy. Anyhow, take care of yourself.
All right, good deal. See you, Bill. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And apparently the story out of Tampa had a little bit of resonance for Asa out in Vancouver. Work therapy? Does Mr. Atchison mean slavery? Or is it scrip I'm thinking of? No, I mean, scrip was at least spendable. These guys, Asa, don't even get scrip. I mean, it sounds like a work camp to me. But, you know, I'm a liberal and progressive, and I think people ought to be paid for the work they do, and I mean, but you know, some of that goes back to the thinking that went into the so-called welfare reform of the mid-1990s, where people were going to have to work for their welfare, but the work they were going to do was going to be uncompensated labor. And the way it all worked out, it was just a way to stop giving anybody anything. And yet, lo and behold, here we are in 2014, and there's a freshman congressman getting ready to enter the Congress who's convinced that, you know, that one in our White House is out there secretly giving away $35,000 checks to poor blah women. God damn, the stupid in this country is stunning sometimes. Oh, and thanks very kindly. Thanks very, very kindly to Robert. And between Robert and Sal, we are $125 away from meeting the anonymous matching challenge that we would have had on for tomorrow. But just in case I don't get back from the dock in time, we're doing tonight, and we got about 15 minutes to meet that. So much appreciated all the help. Thank you very kindly, Robert in Australia, for matching Tom's challenge. That was a huge, really huge. Oh, where? Oh, okay. I mentioned Robert in Australia. Yeah, why not do the Rupert Murdoch story? Talk about your Titanic thinking. Now, you may recall on Friday that I mentioned having seen the trailer for the new Ridley Scott vehicle, Exodus Gods and Kings. Lots of CGI. Lots of fun. And, of course, it's the retelling of Moses and Ramses and Moses, Moses, Moses. Who is this Moses? I am thinking this Moses shall have been a fool. Sorry, can't resist. Miss Yulebrenner. Was there, you know, I mean, I know Jack Palance could be, like, pretty evil and stuff, but Yulebrenner playing the evil robot cowboy gone bad in Westworld gave me nightmares for weeks. Anyway. We were talking about this movie, this Exodus movie, which, although it is about Egyptians and people who had originally come from the Tigris and Euphrates valleys of Mesopotamia, migrated over to the Levant, you know, Abraham, that whole mythological structure. Even though those are the people involved in this myth, The people in Exodus are just as they were when Cecil B. DeMille was doing it. White, 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 white. And it's causing a bit of a firestorm. Well, not a firestorm, but some controversy. And naturally, the film is distributed by 20th Century Fox, which, of course, is owned by, come on, Rupert Murdoch. And Rupert Murdoch could not resist taking to the Twitters to espouse his opinion of the controversy. His tweet as follows. Moses film attacked on Twitter for all white cast. Since when are Egyptians not white? All I know are. Wouldn't you love to see the long, long list of white Egyptians that Rupert Murdoch knows? Well, and again, you have to understand, a Saudi prince owns 48% of News Corp, and when you've got enough money to own 48% of News Corp, in my world, you're white as white can be. And then he began to get a little petulant. Everybody attacks last tweet. Of course Egyptians are Middle Eastern, but far from black, they treated blacks as slaves. And he caught hell for that. Rupert, you're a freaking trillionaire. Nobody ever taught you about the first rule of holes? When you're in one, quit digging? Cava? So, second tweet, worst is the first. Here we go, third time. Okay, there are many shades of color. Nothing racist about that, so calm down. And many shades of white out there. You know, if I was doing this story a little earlier in the program, we'd take a break now and we'd play Whiter Shade of Pale, because I'm an old DJ. Since when are Egyptians not white? All on now. He's been masturbating to the Egypt scenes from Gallipoli again. All the Egyptians are now white. Can't buy that stuff. You just can't buy that. That's precious. Oh, and I'm sure everybody by now knows the story of the five members of the St. Louis Rams receiving corps who ran out onto the field on Sunday with the hands up, don't shoot, Chester. Well, some of you may not have seen my Facebook or Twitter posts. I want to note right now, though, that two of those players who were brave enough to do that are in fact, former Mountaineers. Now, sometimes I get cranky emails about talking about sport and stuff, but sport remains the national language, our national metaphoric language. And what happens in sport often resonates across a lot of different cultural boundaries. And when those five members of the Rams receiving corps ran out on the field and doing the hands up, don't shoot gesture, it meant something. It meant a lot. Dr. John put me onto the story early on Sunday, and I was thrilled. I was proud. I was proud of Stedman Bailey and Tavon Austin, both pretty talented receivers, any way you look at it, but proud of them having the courage to stand up to what has been some pretty intense hate, especially in the St. Louis area. I don't know what they studied. I don't know what classes they took. I don't know if they graduated. I don't know what degrees they got, if they did, while they were at West Virginia University. But I like to think that maybe they learned a little bit more coming into West Virginia than they knew before they got there. And if you combine the things that you can learn about oppression in a place like West Virginia with what they knew innately about oppression being young black men in America, maybe the combination of those events, and maybe I'm entirely wrong, but maybe the combination of those two factors brings together a situation in which it becomes a little bit more of a moral imperative for them to stand with people who have been denied justice in Ferguson, Missouri. To stand with the people who were outraged that the body of Michael Brown was left to bleed out in the hot August sun of Missouri. Meanwhile, hey, remember when we were talking about the fact that apparently the prosecuting attorney of St. Louis County, Bob McCulloch, was involved in an organization that was doing fundraising for Darren Wilson's legal defense? And it turned out his name is Jeff Rurda, R-O-O-R-D-A, I got no idea, Rurda. It sounds, I don't know, it sounds like a sick cricket, Rurda. No, it sounds like a sick bullfrog, doesn't it? Got hold of a bad mosquito or something. But anyway, well, Jeff Rurda, it turns out, is a part of the St. Louis Police Officers Association. He's the business manager for the St. Louis Police Officers Association. Essentially, he's the business manager for the St. Louis Police Union. And by God, when those five uppity Ram players came out with the hands up, don't shoot, by God, he got angry! And had to run out and issue a statement. And I know there are those that will say that these players are simply exercising their First Amendment rights. Cops have First Amendment rights, too,
and we plan to exercise ours. It's dangerous out there.
Sorry, different quote. We're going to exercise ours. Yeah, what, with a gun, Jeff Rurta? And went on and called for the NFL to fine these five receivers for daring to have an opinion about the ongoing killing of young black men in this country by police. Yeah, Jeff Rurta said that the St. Louis Police Officers Association demands that those players be fined by the NFL. The NFL and Roger Goodell, who was recently found to be a liar by a federal judge. That stings. Well, the NFL said, "Nah, I don't think we're gonna fine the five Rams players." NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy said, "We respect and understand the concerns of all individuals who've expressed views on this tragic situation, but we're not gonna fine them." And good, because see, had they fined them or suspended them, Roger Goodell's life would have gotten manifestly worse. Wait, hey, Roger, how many days are you going to suspend these guys, considering how many days you didn't initially suspend Ray Rice for knocking his wife unconscious and dragging her out of an elevator like a sack of potatoes, huh? How are you going to balance that, Roger? Why don't you resign? Yeah. Meanwhile, however, Jeff Rurta that we were talking about, Jeff Rurta, it turns out, has a bit of a problem. He's got a history of being busted as a dirty cop, and I mean that within its understood sense, a corrupt member of the police force. Nice, huh?
My God, we want him punished.
Marvelously coherent, Diane in Kansas Stan says, "I'm proud of the Rams players, too, and I don't even like football, but I like the object lesson. And it's coming from the Midwest," Diane says, which I think is also significant. Oh, update from Oz. Robert in Australia pointing out, "I hate to say it, but we've been having Black Friday sales here in Oz for a number of years. We don't have the Thanksgiving Day holiday or on the Thursday, so it's really just a Friday sale. I've only ever noticed the online sales as I get endless emails for some days before. I don't know how successful or not any Black Friday sales were, if any stores had them. Boxing Day has become the day for attending sales in Australia. The stores play it pretty cool, as when they tried to do the whole 99-cent TV bit, people got hurt trying to be the first in the store, and the government suggested they don't do that again in future, so entrance into those sales these days is very strictly controlled. Here's the thing, Bob. I once worked in the IT mainframe computers department of one of Australia's largest retail chains. On Wednesday, we used to print the stock lists, so we got to see them. It's hard not to when putting a new box of paper in the printer. On average, every item was marked up between 100 and 150% over the purchase price, so even when the store had a sale, they still made money. And all they're really doing is clearing out old stock. And there we go. This way to the egress. Well, I do sincerely hope that I will be on the air tomorrow evening. I will try not to be freaked out or anything. Really, it's a matter of how long do I have to sit in the waiting room? How long do I have to sit in the examining room? How long do I have to wait? And then what happens in the 5 minutes that I actually get to see the neurosurgeon? That's the biggest part of it. I hope I'm back. If not, see you Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thanks again to everybody who helped us meet Tom's challenge this evening and get a little ahead of it. Thank you very kindly to Robert in Australia for meeting Tom's challenge. Thank you, Sal, and thank you, Robert, different Robert. Thank you all very kindly. If between now and whenever anybody wants to finish off the anonymous challenge of $150, of which $125 remain, it is much appreciated and will go toward making all of this keep working. Thanks, everybody. And, of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.